Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the French Connections Thursday edition. Today's date is the 4th day of February 2010. Of course, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you all back with me for another important broadcast. You might notice some changes in the way the website's running over the next few days. Ladies and gentlemen, I've had a serious technical breakdown in my entire computer system. Looks like it's a dead deal here, and so this is going to take some time to get my systems back up, my Dreamweaver straightened out, all of this stuff. This is the way my website has grown, it has become quite a mangled mess of things, and the hardest thing to realize is that I've got over 11 gigabytes of information on the website, and that's a lot of stuff. So that's what I face over the next few days, and I don't know if it was intentional. I don't know if somebody did it, or I downloaded a virus, or whatever happened to me, but the result is the same, whether someone did it or it happened from other reasons, but complicates my life a bit. And so we're going to use old technology today. I'm going back to the little tiny recorder that I've used many times, and we're going to get a good show here. I made an error in a statement yesterday, and not intentionally. I pointed out that Eustace Mullins had never been interviewed by Alex Jones and had not been interviewed by people like Mike Rivero, and I also included in that in Jeff Rentz. Now, Jeff Rentz had interviewed Eustace, and more than once even, and so I made an error there. However, it's my belief, and it has been my belief for a long time, that the marriage of nonsense with such important facts is an abomination, and for me, to do that really destroys or detracts from the effort I'm trying to make here, because it allows the mainstream to point to what we do here and tries to make fools out of us, and more often than not, they're successful at it. And so I've always believed that Mr. Rentz was hurting me, not helping me. The fact that that Eustace was on his programming was an error on my part, but my position on Rentz has never changed until he drops completely the nonsense that's on that website. Then I have no use for the guy and never will, and I believe wholly that he's involved somehow in deception. That's what I believe. Because nobody with two brain cells to rub together could believe in SETI, Yetis and the rest of this stuff that he writes on there. It just boggles my mind. But anyway, that's for another day. So the apologies made. I have to put that up front. John Kaminsky has worked with me on and off. We've been on for a while now. We're working together again, and I'm so happy that that's the case. We come from the same area of the country, so there's a bit of a swamp Yankee heritage in his family as well as mine. We're swamp Yankees. We're from the southern part of New England, and he's worked all over the world. He was a journalist for a long time. He continued his journalist skills in fighting crime here, the big crime, the real crime, the one that has transcended the age, if you will. And he knew Eustace as I did, and I brought him up to have a little discussion about our friend Eustace and other issues as well. So I'm going to bring him up right now. John, are you with me?
Hi, Daryl.
Great to have you back, John. You know, I'm not surprised that we've lost Eustace, although any time you lose somebody of that importance, you're going to feel the sting of it. So, will you have something to open up the show with regarding Eustace?
There was something angelic about him all through his life.
Yeah.
He took care of his ill sister. To read what he went through, he wrote The Secrets to the Federal Reserve in 1952.
That's right, yep, yep.
And since that time, he has been dogged, harassed by a lot of the same stuff that we've gotten, only in spades.
That's right.
They tried to kidnap him and put him in a mental institution. They harassed his parents to death. They threw him down the courthouse steps. Nobody could believe the story. He was 81 years old. They threw him down the courthouse steps. His heart stopped. Somehow, talk about a will to live. He had such a strong presence, and it was, and I'm not the kind of believer that he was, but his belief put in him such a strength, and with his ability, over the many years, he wrote story after story that cut to the heart of what was really happening. And it was so vivid and so accurate that the government, the official structure, became so apoplectic about what he was doing that they did all these things to him to try to stop him.
Well, you know, his great mentor went through earlier than him and gave, I guess he imbued him with the same kind of drive that Ezra Pound had, because Ezra Pound went through the mental institution and the drugging and everything, and he gave up a career as a great artist and poet to pursue truth and handed the mantle of that truth to Eustace in a way that that Eustace did it proud. In other words, he took that mantle and did Ezra Pound proud.
He did. He definitely did.
Yeah. Well, and you know, my cousin has been working on these issues about vaccinations and polio and so forth, and she told me the book he wrote back in the 60s on death by injection was a definitive study on this, and she said, "When I thought I knew what I was talking about till I read it." And this is 35 years old already, so...
Right.
Yeah.
I whittled that down to a great one-sentence review of that book, and it was a review of the bogus medicines that are invented to cure fictional diseases.
That's right. And that's exactly right. And interesting, what Eustace realized right away was that the set of symptoms that they kept putting out for certain diseases kept cropping up in new types of diseases that, in fact, were just new descriptions of the same one that people had in the first instance. In other words, polio disappeared, but then they started having other types of diseases that had all the same symptoms, including all the way up to the modern AIDS things, a lot of the things
right.
that were in polio. So, yeah, and he knew that.
Mm-hmm. He did. He put together so much, and he put together so much hardly anybody could believe him. I mean, he has his lifelong diehard followers, but his penetration into the whole media spectrum is really minimal. He has been limited to the shadow publications over time,
yes.
the spotlights and the criminal politics, and his thesis, in my mind, is so right on, but his thesis to the general public is so jarring that they haven't been able to grasp it firmly, and he didn't help himself. He didn't help any of us by cloaking everything in this Old Testament way of seeing things.
That's his generation, John, too, though.
Well, it's unfortunate it's so difficult to see, because if you persevere and begin to see it, you see that there's never been anything put together that's more accurate that describes the transmission of this vicious power group down through time and how they took out one country after another until now they have them all.
Well, you're right. And, you know, interestingly, when I talked to Eustace about my awakening, and he was really secondary to what I learned in the first instance from Ben Friedman, my awakening came after sitting through that audio file of Benjamin Friedman that had been sent to me. And it blew me right off back. My hair was flowing in a still room, you know. I was like, oh, my goodness. And I knew right away what I was listening to was accurate and true. Now, it was interesting, though, that Eustace, in his later years, told me that he suspected his alliances a little bit. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, he kept relationships with the people he was outing.
Right.
And I said, well, what did that mean to you? He said, well, if you know that there's an axe murderer and you tell on him, and then, you know, 6 years later you're having dinner with him, somebody's going to ask a question. But it can't detract from the truth that was told by Friedman. But again, Eustace had a couple of questions about him and knew him well. But he told me another story in a private conversation, because I used to call him when I first met him. I used to call him for verification, and I when I first read Nestor Webster's book and Elizabeth Dilling's book, I would call him about information that was shared in those books, and he said, "Well, you know that that Webster got a lot of her information from Ezra Pound." And I said, "Is that true?" He said, "Absolutely." And Ezra was you know, big in Europe. He actually traveled to Europe and had communications with a lot of very prominent people in Europe about these things. And he said, "Yeah, that's a fact." And I learned so many things in private conversations with him. And he was still very sharp. He didn't lose a step in the last couple of, the last year or so, I guess he did. But 3-4 years ago, he was still on the money.
He had a good last year, I can tell you that. Jesse Lee kept him in fine shape after he rescued him from the nursing home and took him on that 40-day raw vegetable fast up in Maine at some friends in Maine. Jesse, for almost 2 years, took him around to one place after another, and Eustace had a hefty dose of love and veneration and interesting conversation and most of all a good diet. And neither one of them is rich.
Yep.
And they made some money actually physically selling his books, but I mean it was a pittance really. This is all Jesse's doing, and he really gave him such a tremendous gift, and this, I guess Jesse's really the only person in the world who acknowledged Eustace in the way that he really should be acknowledged, because I've gotten several messages from people in the last few days, and they all say the same thing, and even Jesse said the same thing when he gave me the news. There are so many brainless people in the world who are beloved by millions and who are worshipped and emulated, and here is a man who lived an exemplary, a really exemplary life, an unbelievably exemplary life, and painted a picture of reality as it needs to be seen, because we're all suffering from the lies of the reality that they've given us.
That's right.
He painted a picture that was so clear, where you can see the enemy, and the enemy is our own belief system.
That's right.
And he expose the insanity of that in so many ways. I have a copy of The Biological Jew on my table this morning. I have many of his books, and he didn't do it. I mean, there's this fashion now, because of you-know-who, to call everything that investigates these matters a hate crime.
That's right.
But Eustace, no matter how hard you try to pin that label on him, is so animated by the spirit of love that he gets from his Jesus that there's no way anybody can do that. And what comes through, if you can persevere through all the names and episodes, is the same pattern in every war. This is what Captain Ramsey gave us, too. We see
right.
the repetitive pattern
That's right.
of how aliens come into countries and seduce those countries. They coerce those countries into adopting their ways, and they ravage those countries. Every country in the world has suffered from this, and we're suffering to it from such a degree now that we can't even clearly see our own future.
Well, but speaking about the biological Jew, I read that and then went back and perused some of the information after having watched a special here on British television, because I have a satellite system. And I watched this show about how dogs were trained to behave in certain ways by this Russian scientist who took the anger and fight out of a fox and turned it into a domestic pet in a few generations. And what was interesting, and what made me go back to the book after seeing that, was that some of the claims that Eustace made was that the Khazars, that which is the predominant group within in Zionism, has always been a middleman country. In other words, it was trading the Rus down to Constantinople, or the Norse were using them as conduits for goods, and so were the Western Europeans. So they were always brokers and middlemen, and they never produced much, but they were always in the middle making deals. And he said, you know, as time went on, they learned to be ruthless about this deal making. And if you've got a 2,000-year history of this kind of behavior, it becomes more than just a belief system. It becomes a way of life, both emotionally and physically. And so what we've spawned here is a ruthless parasite, and he talks a lot about parasitism and the rest of it, but that's the biggest part about that, how the parasite hooks onto the host. But the behavior that he described in the book was made. I had a revelation after watching that show and then reading it again. He's not far off the truth on this. And for me to put that up on my website, I would expect the jackboots to come and arrest me. I won't go there with that. However, I recommend everybody out in the listening audience, if they can download or find a copy of The Biological Jew, to open your eyes to the possibilities that much what he says in there is accurate. Yeah.
I think the greatest, and I haven't really read that much of Eustace, really, maybe four or five books, but, and he's got hundreds. For me, the greatest contribution that he's made to my thinking is to be able to build a family tree of these oppressors back through time.
That's right.
Now, in recent stories, I've concentrated on describing how there was the English Revolution, where they killed a king and they set up shop in London.
Yeah.
And they moved on to France and totally destabilized that and turned that into something that's still beyond comprehension. And 500 years of subterfuge and subversion in Russia eventually led them to overthrow Russia. There's their whole dance with Germany that took about 150 years, which ended up in total destruction. Everywhere these people sneak into power, coerce their way into power, steal power, the end result is total destruction and enslavement.
That's right.
And I've tried to take that back to the teachings of the Talmud, because I think the line is clear. But Eustace did a little bit of a different dance, because he's tied up with the Old Testament, which, in my mind, I have a great deal of difficulty separating Jews and Christians in Old Testament times. To me, they kind of all meld in together, so I don't entirely know what's going on. But since that time, we see the creation of the Christian church as being created by Saul, and it's another Jewish story. And when we come down through time, we see Eustace is able to track them from Canaan, and then they became the Phoenicians, and they became the traders of the world, holed up in Carthage, got destroyed in Carthage by the Romans, who didn't like them, but regrouped and went to Venice, and from Venice, and with the Ashkenazis in Germany, it's bribery, blackmail, and murder. They got a hold of France. And
right, through the Catherine de' Medici,
yes.
And that's right. Yes, that's
yes,
right.
Yes. They got a hold of France, and that virus has now spread to the entire world through its financial system.
That's right.
And the control of the financial system, as Rothschild said, means that they control absolutely everything. And the great sin of Americans today is that they don't realize how much of their education has been filtered through Jewish censors for ulterior motives.
That's right.
Which is why we have this robotized, pornographic society today that is about to destroy itself.
Well, and interesting that you noted the Catholic Church today is only a shell of its former self, but according to the research that Andrew Carrington Hitchcock did, and I worked on that timeline with him, what we discovered was back in the 1820s, the Catholic Church turned over their banking and finance to Rothschild.
There it is.
And as soon as they did that, they were neutered. The church had been neutered, and they became an arm of the Rothschild banking structure. And you know, when you talk about Rothschild, a lot of people think Rothschild as an individual. Rothschild is more of a system that has been built at the very top of this structure. And of course, there are Rothschild family members involved in it, but this is more of a, we've got the Honigs involved, and you'll find a Honig name in the Federal Reserve Board. I think he's out of Dallas. And you'll find Oppenheimer's name in there. You'll find the Brothmans.
That just reminded me of something. Eustace said in somewhere in one of his books that the early financial funder of Hitler was a man named Oppenheimer.
That's right. But you know, the Rothschild's fortune started with he was supposedly a trading employee in Oppenheimer's Hanover, outside of Frankfurt, Hanover, German trading house, and his account, it was called a counting house at the time.
Yeah.
And this was when he was a Bauer. And of course, from that was spawned the Red Shield and so forth. Now, how that they were selected is still a mystery to a lot of people. However, what Andrew found out in his research was how they fanned out their power everywhere. The Rothschilds had many, many girls born in their family, but you almost never can find where they went, who they married. Well, what they married and who they married was they ensconced themselves into the royal families of Europe.
The Habsburgs, yeah.
And well, not only the Habsburgs, but you'll find that they ended up as dukes and counts and viscounts across Europe, and they were married off. And of course, you know, according to these people's crazy scheme, the mother brings the Judaism into the family,
right.
And then they got involved with the Sassoons, which they called the Rothschilds of the East. And the rest of it is historic, but and again, you mentioned something quite interesting, John, when you said that you know, Eustace would go back to biblical explanations, and I don't discount that wholly, but I still find it to be driven by a psychopathic demand for greed, power, and a lust for the two. These people are just greedy, lustful, power hungry madmen. And because how could you do something like they did to Katrina, to the Katrina victims, or to the Haitians, which I'm convinced now that some sort of particle weapon was used on them, or all of these things, and not feel absolute sickening remorse and guilt? What kind of human being can do that? I don't know. It's beyond
only
me.
Only a human being that considers all others than his kind beasts.
But I couldn't kill animals like that. I'm not even capable of slaughtering animals in that way. I mean, so my point is that I don't even have the ability to come out of myself and go out and take a herd of 1,000 cattle and hack them up. I mean, come on, you know.
Well, it's all in how you're raised. You know, I've tried to stick to the philosophy here that these are just people. Jews are just people afflicted by bad dogma. They've been taught to believe things that aren't true and are very bad for everyone, including themselves. But when you see the manifestation of the Jewish philosophy in the world, it almost makes you, I mean, it makes your stomach turn, and it almost makes you think that there is something more than human going on here. There's something that is so far beyond, and I don't know if this is part of the human capability or not. I suppose we've led to we've been led to believe that it is, that humans are as savage as any being in the universe. But when you read the depictions of this assertion, all too often they tend to be Jewish authors like William Golding and Lord of the Flies.
That's right.
And this takes us back to Freud and the very dark view he had of humanity. Now, the opposite of Freud seems to be, for purposes of this argument, the Catholic Church and the belief in the divine spirit. There's a lot of people who do believe that, and they're good people.
Yeah.
The difference between the two is that any kind of intellectual thought process at all automatically challenges the existing power structure simply for the purposes of making life better and improving it.
Yep.
When the existing power structure takes that personally, as they did in the instance of the Tower of Babel, when God said, I don't want them to build this because they might become as great as ourselves. That's in Genesis chapter 11. That tells me that this is not some divine spirit who's giving out all these orders. This is some evil old man who wants to make his power structure better than the other guy's power structure. And that's what we're facing. What we see developing in the world today is nothing more than the manifestation of the hypocrisy of what we really believe. And what we really try to believe is that we don't die and we adopt these religions to make us safe from death, and we know that's a lie. The belief in that lie causes all the mass murder in the world.
Well, and the adherence to that lie is driven by people's indoctrinated fear of death in the first instance.
Now, Eustace, on the other hand, would not agree with any of that. Eustace was a believer in Jesus, and he was a believer in doing good works and telling the truth as he saw it. And he did a marvelous job over time. When you talk about that Murder by Injection book,
yeah,
it reveals the medical profession to be just a bunch of used car dealers trying to make money as fast as they can and willing to swill anything on the public. I mean, when you think about, and he didn't, I mean, he got into AIDS and fluoride and all that, but when you think about the number of things that have been put into our diets that are really bad for us, dangerous for us. I'm still trying to track down the processed bread apparently has a relationship to nearsightedness, which is a classic example of how the Jewish food industry gets together with the Jewish drug industry and creates some dietary craze that actually produces a new medical market. And, of course, we see that going crazy now with all of these drugs that they're selling over the television.
Well, you're right. But even now, and I'm going to bring up something that Eustace didn't get into very deeply because this is a new manifestation. What Mohammed Rafiq and I were speaking about last night was the implosion of the Ottomans once again, and how the Freemasonry system was extended across Arabia. And as a result of that expansion, they were able to take those countries. And I've recently seen proof that Muammar Gaddafi's mother was Jewish. So there's we're not being nobody's shocked anymore. But what's interesting, he said they were outed. The Freemasons had trouble in their crime network because of too many exposures. So they began using things like common purpose here in Europe, and they started using things like organizations like CFR and organizations like Bilderberg. But in fact, what you'll find behind the scenes of all of those organizations is a very powerful Zionist influence, if not complete control. But what he also, and what I pointed out with him, is that they've emboldened themselves so much that they're actually taking on the road this new Chabad Lubavitch crime wave that is setting itself up in every major city in the world, not just the West. There's I think Muhammad said he counted 11 of them in China now. They're in every major city in America. And It's interesting that they're finding private jobs for Jewish law students across America. Isn't that an interesting little tidbit? And but when you find out that these people were in charge of that slaughterhouse in the Midwest, where they're supposed to be doing kosher work, but in the same building, they're making methamphetamine, and they're selling tainted meat to other Jews. So the question, So the question then becomes, what idea is this really religious? I mean, they're Orthodox Jews selling tainted meat to other Orthodox Jews, and they're adulterating and sickening their religious process by making drugs right next to their meat slaughtering place, and then bribing the judges to get them off. I mean, the whole thing just is unbelievable. You know,
if the Jews had saints in their religion, would Bernie Madoff be one?
Well, you know, I got a take on that too. You know, I always thought that the whole thing where his saying his sons came along and told on him was, I mean, what a bunch of nonsense. I mean, yeah, my dad came in one day. We worked together for 20 years on this crime wave, but I never knew he was doing it. And he came in one day and admitted it. So we turned him in. Okay, the whole thing I think is pretty clear that the American government said that they would pay off if there was fraud, but they wouldn't pay off if there was bad investments. And I think they turned the whole thing into a fraud to ensure that their Jewish investors would get paid off by the U.S. government. And that's what I think happened. But that's...
That makes good sense.
But see, that's my take. And everybody wrote me letters saying I was a whack. And I got to tell you, I always smell the money out, and that's where it leads to me. But you know, John, when we look at this stuff today, of course, we've made a lot of headway, and you're a big part of that, and the French Connection, and the Info Underground, and so many places out there have been born to fight this fight. And I see a sea change in many, many people, especially here in Europe. The outrage they're feeling at Israel's actions in Gaza and the starvation of that people. But then, you know, the organ stealing and the rest of it, this has all been made front headline news. The Swedish foreign minister called them, all kinds of crazy names and stuff. So it's coming out. Now, whether or not you and I are going to affect change in a fashion that's going to happen soon, or whether we're going to fail at this and become slaves, I don't know. But certainly, I know we've put up the good fight. Where do you think we are right now?
Boy. I'm always frustrated that I can send a really penetrating piece to someone who I hope will get it. And these are people who've been on my list for a number of years. And what I get back is some superficial thing about Obama or some... At this point, I consider anything involving the legislature or domestic politics or pronouncements by Dianne Feinstein or Nancy Pelosi, I consider that really a distraction because it keeps us from identifying the underpinnings of how these people get their franchise to do what they're doing, how Dianne Feinstein can be one of the top senators and her husband is one of the top military contractors raking in billions every year, and everybody just turns a blind eye to it, like Kennedy's babes in the White House. They never talked about that. Well, they never talk about all these connections between our top politicians and the money that they receive for doing things that favor the Jewish takeover of the world, which has been really going on now since like 1770.
That's right.
I just figured that out the other day. Somebody asked me when the New World Order started, and I thought about it, and I said 1777.
That's right, Weishaupt. That's right. And he was given his marching orders as a crypto-Jew that was had already infiltrated Catholicism. And but you know, the interesting thing is we've got others who many people email me about. One of them is Ron Paul. This guy gets on national television and says, well, I absolutely do not believe in the conspiracy that America or anyone else had anything to do with the attack on the 9/11, and that it had to be Arabs, and the reason they did it was because we've been messing around in their country. And he said this, and I looked at that screen and I said, this guy, I had already said he was a shill long before that. But been. Of course, he's part of this Mises Institute that wants to reinstate the gold standard again, which is, all you're going to be doing is handing over the power to the same people. So it's all a nonsense. And, of course, if he were really doing them damage instead of playing the foil, they'd have done him in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty easy to spot this stuff now, especially, you know, you are a forerunner to me in this, John, and I got a lot of my first inclinations about the truth from you and from of course Eustace and others. But what I've been able to do over the last 5 years is probably read 50 to 70 books. I've studied this stuff, and I'm at the point now where I have those glasses they live on, and you can't put you can't put a lot by me anymore because I smell a rat right away. And you know, but see, my wife says to me that she sees it now too.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, well, and I don't talk to her much about this because I think it would really interfere in our personal relationship and everything. But she says, you know, I watch French TV and I see this and I see that, and I said, well, you know, there you are. And but my neighbor sees it too. And others that I've spoken to, John, who just a year ago or even less were not inclined to think this, they are now. There has been an impetus of the problems in the world have given these people a new reason to look into it, I think.
Here's one for you to keep in mind. Barbara and I used to drive around Sarasota and look at all the beautiful houses. Sarasota is a very beautiful place.
Yep.
And we would drive down these streets with these mansions with mahogany doors and such. And we'd be driving down the street and we'd see a certain kind of house and we'd say, Jewish architecture. And we could go down a street and pick out the houses that were Jewish, so clearly Jewish architecture, because they were completely devoid of soul. They were all this modern art. There was nothing to them that would recommend being a home. It was a showpiece for opulence that was just devoid of soul. And as you drive around looking at buildings, you can see Jewish architecture and other architecture. And the other architecture is full of life, and the Jewish architecture is sterile.
Well, John, you know, if you when you were visiting New York, if you went to the Guggenheim Museum and didn't throw up as you walked up that rampway, this is actually a museum of sickening Jewish art, and it was just absolutely the most. I could have a blind monkey with no limbs do a better job of painting a picture.
That's the whole thing. And I tried to tell this to this Jewish boy last night who couldn't understand what I was saying. But Jewish influence, as manifested through money, has debased and cheapened and profaned every art, every science, everything.
That's right. That's right.
It's and which is why people look at me funny when I say, you can't consider any problem in the world without first considering the Jewish component of it.
That's right. That's right, and we're not, and that's not a condemnation of the rank and file Jew at the that owns the corner store.
Not at all. That's how it is.
Yeah, that's how it is. And I said something to you yesterday where we do have a problem with this indoctrination process within their community that affixes to their thinking a mindset that permits them to take benefits without effort, without working for them. In other words, anybody in the Jewish community today knows that they're favored when it comes to school admissions or when it comes to job interviews or when it comes to court cases or, I mean, there's so many things. And they know that they get better treatment. Now, knowing that, that should immediately let them know that something is awry in our world. How do you square the circle? Well, good people would square it by saying, I've got a problem with that, like this guy Osman does. His name's Gilad Osman. He just looks at a situation and then cuts right to the chase and gives the straight poop on it. But he is...
You know, I have... I've seen his name pop up, and I've had a lot of people recommend him to me, and I've glanced at a couple of his things. But I'm afraid I have a rule that I don't think I'm ever again going to violate. And that is, we've had 3,000 years of Jewish perfidy, of Jews explaining what's happening to the world, of Jews trying to rescue us from our predicament. And I truly believe that at this point, after this shameful record of human behavior, I don't think the Jews have any say in their own future at this point.
No, I don't think so either. I don't see
it. We have to declare how they must behave in order for us to tolerate them. And the only thing, a Jew may not defend Judaism, because if he does, he's admitting he's a criminal.
That's right. Especially if he's traumatic.
Jews only have to do one thing to save themselves from the wrath of the rest of the planet. And that is, they have to prove to not only to themselves, but to others, that they can be actual human beings and that they can show actual love to these other human beings. Otherwise, they're not useful to anyone and they will pay the consequences.
Well, I agree. And you know, one of the things that, but this guy Osman, I've always said from this bully pulpit that I've built over here, was that the best way to undermine these people would be from within, almost like a growing cancer. And there are people that are in the Jewish community dismantling this, but I will not, under any circumstances, hand them the keys to my front door. And simply put, if you're doing good works, then good for you, and I will look into what you say, and if it passes the smell test, I will go with it, but I will not give you any kind of power of any type in my life or anybody's life that I have any influence over. So that has been my stance, because I don't want to become as bad as the people I'm trying to get rid of. I would have to get rid of my humanity then. Now,
that's right.
You know, when you went to see, this is some years ago now, but when you went to see this guy Ritter stand up at that conference and give that speech, and you talked to me about him after. You said something is wrong with that guy. and first of all, you said either he's working for the intelligence service or Israel or somebody, but whatever he is, whoever he's working for, he's not working for us. And when I, you know, of course, you know, sealing records on him trying to meet a 14-year-old girl in a Burger King bathroom, and then having the court seal those records, I mean, come on, that was the charge, and then all of a sudden nobody can read what the outcome was. That's a major red flag. Well, of course, this guy's back at it again. We've nailed so many of the things correctly, John, over time, and made some mistakes. I made a mistake with you, but that was based upon looking at the horizon and saying, I'm seeing things a certain way, and I apologize to you for that still. But, you know, we're trying to do our best work here, and, of course, it's not always accurate, always perfect, but it's done with an honesty, personally, and I think you're the same man, that you're doing it with an intellectual honesty. And if you make a failure, if you have a shift that you have to make, well, you got to make it. But,
Daryl, I have to close a chapter and apologize to you. I found the conclusion of a story that's been puzzling me for a number of years, and it involves Eustace and me and you and Eric Huffschmidt and a whole bunch of other people.
Yep.
Several years back, I had a couple of phone conversations with Eustace.
Yep.
And he expressed to me his desire to have a chauffeur to drive him around town and do what he had to do.
Yep.
I put that together in my mind with a fellow that I'd met many years before who had given me my first copy of The Curse of Canaan. And I read it, and I thought, this is really interesting, but I can't get through a lot of this biblical gobbledygook. And I read other things by Eustace, but he really didn't catch me like he has now. But I certainly appreciated his stature as a historical researcher. So anyway, we had these two good conversations. This guy, I talked to him on the phone, and I said, Eustace is looking for a chauffeur. You'd be perfect for him. Well, it turns out he went down there, and he told me one story, but he did something quite different. And I spent about 2 years trying to attempt to clean up the damage from it when I didn't fully understand what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was in Florida, Eustace was in Virginia, and this guy was in Vermont. It turns out the guy deliberately went down there to steal Eustace's copyrights. I don't know what that means, except that is the phrase his, I guess you'd call her his girlfriend, revealed to me a couple of months back. And even though he had introduced me to the work of Eustace and a lot of other interesting things like the protocols and Lawrence Patterson's criminal politics and stuff like that, he wasn't a trustworthy character. And this is a testament to my own lack of perception in certain situations, where I knew this guy for 20 years. I hadn't seen him in about 15, but we would talk a couple of times a year on the phone about Eustace Mullins or about Fred Loyster or subjects like that. And then, thanks to the help of Jackie Petru, who you know.
Yes, I do.
She got into the middle of it and correctly identified the situation and made me see it, that this guy was a whack job who was lying to everyone that he knew and living a life that was less than exemplary. The fact that I spent so much time talking to him about these some of these historical matters has made me think about what I was doing, and has really made me think about, well, is just because this guy was a crackpot, is the information he gave to me crackpot material? Is Eustace Mullins a crackpot? And I don't think so.
No.
I think what Eustace Mullins has provided is an alternative history that many people need to see, because it just answers so many questions. And why this one particular guy who liked Eustace Mullins' work and saw the value in it turned out to have a personality that was a lot more complex than I realized. It's a cautionary tale for me in getting information from other people.
Well, I caught on to that and added my condemnation of you at the time. And
I know. I did not understand what was happening for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but you know, when Eustace said he was being harassed again, and they wouldn't let him get his driver's license, and then they were going to arrest him if he drove his car anywhere, and all this stuff was going on, and he said, I want to get out of here. I told him, you're always welcome to come visit me here on the farm, I told him. So the next thing you know, some people get in touch with him and say, I'm trying to lure him to Europe so he can be arrested. And I mean, these are the kinds of knuckleheaded things that came out of that. But you know what? Stuff happens. And, you know, there are so many people that are not working for truth here. And I'll give, you know, the king of that is this guy Jones. I mean, this guy wouldn't know the truth if it bit him in the nose.
Speaking of that, I got a good rent story for you.
Well, yeah, go, please.
Alex Jones posted the funeral notice that I sent out about Eustace, and he left my name in it with the two nice quotes I said about Eustace.
Yep.
Rents took the same email that I sent, removed my quotes out, and put his quotes in, and that is the story at the top of his queue this morning about Eustace. And I thought, this is kind of a reprise of that time when I wrote the story called The Jewish War on Freedom of Speech, and I sent it to Rents, and he changed it to the Zionist War on Freedom of Speech, except that other websites were posting it as the Jewish War on Freedom of Speech, and there was Rents calling it the Zionist War on Freedom of Speech, and it was a perfect example of to everyone who observed it of how of the filter that Rents puts on these stories that appear to be critical of the Israeli monster.
Well, but you know, when I wrote with Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, he was still a member of the British Police Department. He was a bobby, and he was changing his career. He didn't do well in his job, and he went to work for as an office manager and into changing jobs and so forth. And he was afraid. He was afraid that the work he was doing was going to get him either killed or whatever. And he had got most of his Rothschild information to start his timeline for me, and I kept shipping him stuff that I found, and I got him going on his very successful book, The Synagogue of Satan. But before he wrote that book, he and I jointly published the Rothschild timeline. And that Rothschild timeline had millions of downloads. Now, you'll find it, the Rothschild timeline, on Rents and without my name on it at all. And I actually am a co-author of that piece. So, you know, but see, it doesn't really matter that much if a righteous and honest website does it. But when a website that puts, Sasquatch on their front page and, alien abductions, there is a school of psyop out there that people are aware of.
Yeah.
That you marry nonsense with truth, and then all of it can be discredited by the mainstream.
Yep.
And of course, that is exactly the game that's being played there, because you go down his list of people on his left side of his page, and many of them are clearly not working honest stuff. I'll give you a good example of was somebody who attacked me early on was Carl Schwartz. And now, I read Carl Schwartz's book, and I'm probably one of the only four or five people on the planet that read it. And it ended up in my furnace because I thought it was better as heat than as a book.
I wanted to tell you about your chart there. Rents did the same thing to Randy Atkins when Randy filmed Eustace and put out a video called the Neo-Zionist World Order or something like that, Neo-Zionist Order. Rents ran that on his site for a long time. A YouTube version of it, I guess, didn't ever give Randy credit, and Randy could not make any headway in getting Rents to do that. He just thumbed his nose at him.
Well,
Randy lost a lot of income from selling that video.
Well, here's the other thing. I mean, when I was working with that knuckleheaded turncoat over there on the West Coast, we came out and did a thing on put a guillotine on there on the one of our articles and said that people who lie about these acts need to be guillotined. So what does Rents do? Rents goes to the police department and says we're threatening his life.
Hey.
So he tries to get us shut down. He tried to have my ISP shut my website down because he says I was forwarding death threats. But the police department just looked at it and told him, get out of here. But he actually made an issue of it and the whole thing. But, now looking back on it, there aren't a lot of places out there, John, who have weathered this fight and stayed true to the facts. Now, of course, you and I have, I always put Zionist Jews because I know there are many Jews out there who don't even follow their religion anymore. They've married outside of their religion. They don't go to synagogue. They may have cultural damage from being Jewish, but they're certainly not out there doing harm to the world with intent, with malice aforethought. Now, that doesn't mean they're not harming them with their cultural norms, but it's certainly, you can't put somebody in jail for being born something, because that to me is hate. Now, so I always say anybody who follows this Zionist bent, and that includes the Zionist Christians that are running around this nutty planet, are poisoning us with a very aggressive form of this sickness. Although at the top, again, it's all Zionist Jewish people, and that's the title they've given themselves, Zionist. I always preface things by saying Zionist, and I know you don't often do that, and that's okay. That is a detail that both of you and I have that's different. But I do that because, well,
I use the unadorned term Jews because I want to upset as many people as possible. And I want every Jew to look at his or her own religion and see what it has done to the world and then try to defend it logically. I'm using the truth. What will you use?
Hmm. Well, usually it's large letters when they're on a forum, and they try to go capital letters on you and then call your names.
That's it.
They call your names. That's it. Well, John, you know, doing this stuff is not a pleasure for me. I wish I do it as a responsibility that I've accepted, and I starting out in this. Cripes, when I opened my website, I had 13 visitors the first week. To my website.
It's an honor to do this, Daryl, and it's an honor to hang out with people like you.
Well, you know, I brought myself up from the bottom of this, and I've given up a lot for it, and even all the way down to my financial life has been completely overturned here. But so what? At least I'm going to go out of this life with a clear conscience, if that's a consolation of sorts.
That's a big deal.
Well, you know, at the same time, I just want life to get back to normal, if it ever was, and clearly what I'm finding out now is whatever I thought was normal has never been.
I've got the mantra, though. I've got the mantra that it's all we need to clean up the world. There's only one thing we need to do to really fix everything, and that's understand what the Jews have done to the world over time and what they're doing to it now.
That's right. But John, you know, that's... That would seem like it should be a rather easy thing to do over 5 years, with so many people wanting it to be done, and yet these skilled criminals have kept this out of the mainstream so effectively for 5 years that I'm really shocked in a lot of ways. I thought that this financial system, because you know my background is in that area, I spent a lot of time looking at the numbers, and to me this system should have collapsed 2 or 3 years ago. And yet, these magic criminals have made this thing stay afloat for 2.5-3 years, where I could have never imagined that to be possible.
Well, they can do anything they want.
And apparently,
they can do anything they want. I know what I wanted to mention. The last two nights, the lead on the CBS Evening News has been terror experts from the administration predicting with certainty that there will be a terror attack on the United States within the next 3 to 6 months. That's what they said. They repeated it the same way both nights. So this is an advance warning from the people who invented Al-Qaeda and made it into an arm of Blackwater. This is an announcement that they're going to pull a stunt.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a false flag operation. And it's going to be blamed on somebody that we want to drop bombs on.
Or somebody domestically that we want to round up.
That too.
Yeah. The way this has worked, people don't believe them anymore, but they don't seem to care that we don't believe them. And they don't seem to... I mean, look at the mincemeat we made out of their vaccination program. Look at the mincemeat we made out of this climate change thing. I mean, basically, they're getting their head handed to them, well, left, right, and center, and it doesn't deter or distract them from lying and lying again. And they just come forward with more and more.
That's what they do.
Well, this thing is very disturbing because there's some parallel events that are going to take place in the next 3 to 6 months. We've got an explosion of these arms, these adjustable rate mortgages, and the peak of that is supposed to happen at the end of June, beginning of July.
Yeah, I saw that.
And there's some other financial things that are happening. And so what I'm saying to you is they would need to say, look, our economy tanked because of these terrible terrorists. We have to go and get them now. But I'm wondering, you know, tomorrow is the day. You want to hear this one, John. Maybe you don't know this. It just comes to light yesterday in a report on Bloomberg that the government made a mistake. They undercounted the unemployed by 990,000 people.
Imagine that.
Now, I said to myself, So, you know, this isn't 300 people or 3,000 or even 30,000, 990,000 people, almost a million people. And, I mean, what does that mean for the rest of us? It means that that I have been accurate in describing the economy and that they have been just using the mainstream media to put lipstick on a pig.
That's all they've ever done.
I don't know what is your take on the ground from people that you run into every day. I don't live there anymore, and frankly, you know, I live out in the middle of nowhere, so I don't have contact unless it's with a farmer. And the farmers over here are desperate. They're not getting pennies for their products, and they're not getting access to loans to sow their seeds, and things are tough for them over here. But aside from that, they don't know what's going on in the world. Do you see people, is the anger palpable? Are you watching people start to wake up with some anger here?
Not a chance.
No.
I see people still, I see the coma deepening and people starting to froth at the mouth as their lives come apart.
So are you predicting gun battles in the urban centers when this whole thing goes Blair-shaped or what?
You know, I haven't spent much time thinking about that. It's almost too horrible to contemplate. Occasionally, I will think about my situation here, which would be not good. I don't know what to do about any of that, I guess, so I don't think about it. But we have been set up for a race war. In which everybody will fight everybody else, and that's exactly what they want.
Yeah. Well, frightening reports have come out, and I do know that the shelves of your local grocery store where you are or where anybody hearing this is will be empty in 3 days if deliveries aren't made. And if the infrastructure breaks down for any reason, for any amount of time, it's going to be every man for himself. And I'm wondering, you know, 400 million guns in private hands, and I think it's 3 or 4 billion bullets in the private hand. I don't want to be around. I don't know. You know,
it's better than the alternative, Daryl.
Well, you're right, and I my children. I've always thought to myself that my noble goal was to leave a better world for my kids. Instead, I'm watching the whole thing melt down around my ears, and anyway, but you know, we've done our hour, John, and it's been a well, we meandered a lot, which that's the best radio, I think. You know, opening up different corners and shedding light in different places. It's the way to do radio because it grabs them, it informs them, it does a lot of great stuff, and you're a wonderful guest to have.
Well, always a pleasure, Daryl.
Well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for tuning in. And, of course, I'll tell John, this file will be downloaded by tens and tens and tens of thousands of people in the next 30 days. So there'll be a lot of people that hear these words. And I hope that all of you can go forward with the idea that to reach down as you're on that ladder to pull people up less fortunate is really an act that will make you feel much better about your condition. If we stick together in family structures and in tight units, we might be able to come together enough to make change that's going to be lasting. I got to tell you, when things do break down, and they will, it's going to be the strength you've got in your neighborhoods and in your families and stuff that's going to win the day. What do you think of that, John?
Never trust a rabbi.
Ever trust him? Yeah, he might take your organs and sell them. Or he might diddle your kid or something. I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, that's a heck of a way to end the show, but I'm going to end it right now, and I'm going to thank John once again. John, thank you.
Thank you, Daryl.
And ladies and gentlemen, until the next time, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please be well. Bye-bye now.